All right.
All right.
I've got my coffee. I've got my burrito, which is obviously necessary for podcasting.
Yeah. So yeah.
I think I'm good now.
Yeah. It is a known fact that eating a burrito while podcasting improves the quality of your podcast.
Hopefully the editors will do a good job taking out the pauses that come from me choosing a very inopportune time just to take a bite of a burrito.
Hi, Sean. How are you? What's going on with you this week?
Well, so I want to talk about Ruby and languages a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Because Ruby's language development has gone off the charts this last week.
Uh-huh.
Like, she went from barely understanding individual words to speaking in full sentences in English, and she's getting there in Spanish. She doesn't quite know enough Spanish to actually make a sentence.
That is really cool. Did you do extra language teaching, or is it just that, like, the human brain suddenly works it out, and now she's able to talk in full sentences?
I mean, I think it's just that part of her brain, like, came online.
Uh-huh. Cool.
But it was just so crazy. Like, I woke up one morning, and she was like, "Hi, Dada. I want car."
I mean, close enough.
Yeah, you know. I don't think she understands things like go into the car, but we'll
sure,
get there.
Sure. That's cool.
I mostly just wanted to do the bait and switch by saying I want to talk about Ruby and languages.
I had figured that was what was coming the moment that you said it, and especially because your mom uploaded a lovely video to her Instagram of Ruby, like, hanging out and talking this morning, but yeah, sure.
I like that you follow my mom on Instagram.
I don't. I follow your mom on Twitter, and it went from her Instagram to her Twitter.
Okay. I like that you follow my mom on Twitter.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I've been doing. How about you? What have you been working on this week?
Leaving my job, which is an interesting time. So I gave notice at DigitalOcean about a week and a half ago. My last day will be next Friday. And with that comes like a lot of interesting and different working patterns in my last 2 weeks. So as the folks at home know, I manage a team, and it's a little sad when you're leaving a team full of really wonderful humans. But I've also this week been thinking about how do I hand stuff off and make sure that there is not Sam is the only person who knows how to do a whole interesting variety of things. Yeah, and that's been really interesting.
Are you allowed to announce where you're going next?
I'm not telling the kind folks on the internet because some stuff has to happen with my visa. And until that happens, there's like all sorts of interesting things that could possibly go wrong. We don't expect them to go wrong. But I will say that like the new gig is very exciting. And as soon as I can tell people on the internet, I will. I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, like,
cool.
It's interesting. So my team is fully remote. I'm the only person who works from DigitalOcean's office. We had the entire team in a virtual office all day. So like we had a persistent hangout running in a room with like a big like 40-inch TV, and we were just sort of like working through things, and I was trying to very deliberately not write new code, which is really hard. It's really, really hard when there's like a thing and you know how to do it and you can't solve it. But instead, like standing in front of the TV and like looking at what other people are doing and like making suggestions and helping them work through stuff and documenting on all of that good stuff. So I'm really like trying to leave my team in a good shape when I depart from them at the end of next week.
So they're going to end up hiring somebody or promoting somebody to lead that team. The team's going to stay the same once you leave?
Kind of. So it's interesting, actually, like because of other things that have been happening at DigitalOcean, we've been going through a little bit of an engineering reorg. And so my team is actually going to get moved to a completely different part of the company from where it sits now. And yeah, there is a plan to hire out someone whose job title will be senior engineering manager, which is a clean one level above what I do. And then also one of the people on that team will be taking over from my role as technology lead. So DigitalOcean, those two roles are distinct. I've been serving both of them for the last little while just because it made the most sense. But obviously with me not there anymore, those are going to be like how they're supposed to work. So that's really cool. So actually with the one person on my team who's going to become the tech lead, I've been doing a lot of like, so here are all of our stakeholders. Here are all of the things they ask and care about. Here's how we sort of do backlog prioritization, you know, a bunch of that stuff. And like really, really trying to ramp people up on a lot of the things I've been shielding them from as EM, which is like kind of what you're supposed to do. Right.
Right.
But it's like, I'm removing the heat shield. Now you have to understand all of the like fire that exists out there. Right.
Yeah. No, it is interesting how big of a difference having a really good manager can make. I'm in some very early talks with different companies, and I've basically just been going up to people who I know are good managers who I'd like to work under and be like, hey, how's it going, buddy? I hear you manage people.
And I hear you're good at it, and I would like to work for you. That's like, that's a really interesting approach, actually, because like, I struggle with the idea of being managed by someone who I'm like really good friends with. That to me seems like it could be complicated and cause interesting sort of interpersonal like work-life balance separation problems. But like, I think if I knew someone sort of like vaguely well, but also knew that they had a reputation as a good manager, that would be really healthy.
Yeah, I mean, some of them I'm closer to than others. I, to a certain extent, share your concern, but having been in that situation now for the last 3.5 years, like, mm-hmm. and also, you know, leaving the job and having that still being on good terms with them and everything, like,
yeah,
I'm less worried about it having done it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not something I've really ever had to do before, and so it's not, I guess it's something I'm just not used to doing. But yeah, it's really interesting times. It's very fun being in a job and like only having 1 week left, because it's like, okay, what are like all of the things that I need to get out of my brain so that these people can succeed without me? Because like, I really do, like, I really, really like my team. It's not like my team is not the reason I'm leaving the company at all. And so it's like, I really want to give them the best opportunity to succeed that I can. Right.
Sure. No, absolutely. And then after your last day, you get to take a nice long break.
So because,
I mean, forced because of visa, but
yeah, because of the aforementioned visa things, I will probably be having at minimum 4 weeks between gigs and possibly more like 6. That's a nice long fun employment for sure.
Yeah, I think it's healthy to do that in between jobs.
Oh yeah, I like hear about people who leave their job and immediately start a new one like the next week, and I'm like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just don't. It's like, when else are you ever going to get the opportunity to take like a 4 to 6 week vacation? You should consider it, right?
Well, and not to mention that, you know, when folks leave their jobs, they are more likely than average to have some amount of burnout going.
Yeah, that is, yes.
So I think taking the time between jobs to really recover is useful.
So that's like a fantastic and perfect segue, because to conveniently segue between things, I do have a little bit of a plan for something I'd like to get done between gigs. So at RubyConf, there was a little bit of a discussion about Ruby and auto-formatting and whether or not hash rockets are good. I wrote a blog post about this, but this blog post did not happen independently. Our good friend Justin Searles was writing his gem, which he calls the Standard Library, which is basically like a wrapper around RuboCop that is then like not reconfigurable once you've wrapped it, right? And the idea being that this produces like a standard Ruby style more akin to GoFemt. To put it mildly, I'm not the biggest fan of RuboCop. And so I've been working on the very beginnings of a little tool which literally loads Ripper and then loads in your Ruby file and then just walks the parse tree and like re-echoes out valid Ruby, but like completely ignores your formatting choices as it does this. Part of what Ripper generates, right, is like where exactly within the file each of the individual elements it parsed were, like if you have stylistic white space between things or like how you format hashes and stuff. And like, for the moment, I'm completely ignoring this. I may allow some amount of user styling, but it's like, it's interesting because it's a lot faster than RuboCop. Like, mm-hmm. I can read, completely parse a file, and write it back out again in 32 milliseconds. And that's fast enough that...
How big is the file, though? Can't do that for a 5,000 line file in 32 milliseconds.
It's a fairly chunky file. Actually, so I will say in profiling, the overwhelming majority of the time is not the parsing and code emission, which I've got...
Right, just I.O.
I've gotten very, very fast through usage of streams. Yeah, it's like... Yeah, so like, that's not... It, like... So far, none of the files I've tried it on have really been significant. A 5,000 line file, sure, but like the point is this. At 32 milliseconds, you could happily put that in your like after save hook in your text editor, which is mm-hmm. not something you would do with RuboCop, right? And this is a thing we have in Go and Elixir, and I don't know if people are doing this in Rust yet. I know you have CargoFemt, but to me, the idea of having something that's fast enough and only cares about formatting and not like linting as well is like a really good place for a tool to exist.
Yeah, no, I agree. I did have some strong opinions when I saw this go out, 'cause I really dislike people making tools that aren't officially associated with the language and calling it things like standard when there's not like a committee, you know, a Ruby affiliated committee that's responsible for deciding it. But then also, I think that if you are going to name your tool something like standard, it should probably be following the standard formats that the majority of people use and not include your weird opinions on hash rockets, which I know that later got reversed. But like that made me feel really. So
the naming there is after the standard JS formatter, which was released.
Which is also not. Shouldn't be called standard.
Right, which was released under sort of like a similar guise, right? Like mildly controversial, like not really associated with the language or like any of the committees in the language at all. I think to be fair here, Justin is being a good-natured, slightly trolling kind of human.
No, sure.
I'm not going to go into a 30-minute rant about why hash rockets are good on the podcast. That doesn't feel like a good usage of anyone's time. But like,
do we want to give the 30-second cliff notes?
It allows you to express all the hashes, works like JSON, and works with keyword args. Although, admittedly, the way it works with keyword args is very weird, but they are fixing that in Ruby 3, which is cool.
They're making it no longer work with keyword args in Ruby 3.
I think you can use the ** operator to like make it do that. Anyway, sure. End of 30-second summary.
Sure.
But so, yeah, I mean, I think even I may come down off this hill. It's been a hill that I've been willing to die on for 5 years, but I think I finally may come down off this hill. Yeah, so that's cool.
I have, like, no issue with people holding that opinion. I just don't think, if you're going to call a tool standard, I don't think it should include those sorts of opinions. It should be, like, what the majority of Ruby code bases do. And the majority of Ruby code bases enforce the 1.9 hash style whenever possible.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. I mean, yes, but fortunately, that's not my tool, so I don't right. have to do that. I'm calling mine RubyFumped, so, you know, even more, like, closely associated with the language. I'm probably going to come down off the hash rockets hill just for, like, practical adoption reasons, but, like, the goal of my tool really is not for me to, like, enforce my style opinions. It's to make it possible for people to understand that tools other than RuboCop can exist for formatting, and that, like, more specifically, because RuboCop does things like load Ruby gems and contains a linter and a bunch of other stuff, like, it's also, like, a lot slower, right? It's not really practical for you to put RuboCop in a post save hook in Vim or like Emacs or whatever, but like with RubyFumped, it looks like it's totally possible that it will be able to do that.
Yeah, and I do agree with you that, like, this sort of tool should be separated from lint. Like, I really like, in Rust, we sort of have three different things. We have the compiler's built-in lints, which are things like unused variables. The worn by default ones are all the stuff, dead code, that sort of stuff.
Missing,
you know,
missing copies, missing debug implementations.
Well, so that's what I was about to say. So then there's a bunch of allow by default that so you can turn on that says, like, hey, warn me if this thing could be copy and I don't implement copy for it.
Right.
Or don't allow any public items without documentation. And then we got Rust format, which only does formatting and is a separate tool. And then we have Clippy, which is the set of lints that are less like, this is clearly a bug if this lint fires, and more, this is the idiomatic way to do things in Rust. Or there's some that are kind of interesting. Like if you've got like a U8 and you do as U16, it'll actually warn you because as will always go between any numeric types. And if you're going up in size, it's completely safe. And if you're going down in size, it truncates. So if you're going up in size, you can call .into instead, which will not work if it's going down in size. So it's saying, like, hey, if the type of this were to change, this code would silently start doing something completely different. So you can do this other thing instead, so that even if the type does change, you'll get an error if it starts becoming,
right.
if the behavior changes to truncation instead of zero extending or sine extending.
It's kind of more like, is it hlint, the Haskell linter in that manner, where it's like it's not really talking about the correctness of your program necessarily at that point, but rather like stylistic things you can do or habits that you can pick up that will improve. So like hlint is actually amazing if you install it into your editor, because it will only show you one correction at a time. So like say you've made like three or four mistakes that it thinks are like bad on a line, it will show you the first one and then like you change it, and then it will show you the second one and like so on and so on. And so it's sort of like it's teaching you by only showing you single warnings at a time, which I think is a really, really cool thing that tool does. But yeah, I really do think tooling of this form should be separate, but also like because I've spent so much time writing Go over the past 2 years, I really, really like that I like save my file and the code just instantly snaps into idiomatically stylistic place, right? That is a great feeling just to watch that happen, right? And so like, I like Ruby, but this tool does not exist in Ruby, but like, it's also not that hard of a tool to build. Parse.y is special. I've learned some things about how Ruby works that I think I knew intellectually, but now I like have a visceral engagement with them. So like one of my favorite ones is how constant path lookups get parsed, which is just kind of amazing. And yeah, like stuff like that. So like this is also helping me get better at Ruby, because like there is no take a parse tree and call 2s onto it and get back a valid piece of Ruby code. So I'm having to like implement that bit. That's where I'm like, oh, these are all of the possible things that could be parsed in these positions that you might not expect, right?
I think you're going to find, though, that for a tool like this to be good, it does need to do more than just create an AST and then spit it back out in the way it thinks it format. It should be formatted. Yeah, so there are certain things that you need to maintain from the original code, especially when it comes to like comments or multi-line strings.
Right, yeah. No, I've multi-line strings you kind of get for free, because like the way they're represented in the AST parse, like, actually, you know what? I haven't gotten to that yet. I'm imagining that won't be too difficult. But yeah, like, yes, you're not wrong. Like, for example, deleting all of a user's comments is probably a bug, right?
Right. Well, but I mean, even like the indentation of the comments or where the line breaks happen.
Yeah, possibly. I want to see how far I can get with completely ignoring where users put their line breaks and then decide whether or not I need to allow that. I'm introducing a small amount of taste there, certainly. I'm not yet sure whether or not this tool is opinionated or unopinionated as well. It may end up being that like I decide that my formatting is better than everyone else's and therefore I am correct.
See, I think it should be opinionated, but you just have uncontroversial opinions.
Yeah, that's probably where I'm going to end up, right? Or like unopinionated and give you some configuration. I'm probably going to err really hard on the side of no configuration or like very little configuration. So it's really funny. When Go first came out, Go Firmed totally had an option where you could use spaces instead of tabs, and now it does not. Go code has tabs, end of story, right? And it's like Ruby code has two spaces, end of story, right? Like,
yeah,
and so on and so on and so on. So we'll see. It's like right now it's like I could barely round trip like toy files through the thing and have them come out the same way, right? My objective is to be able to like put all of RSpec through it and like not break any tests, and then like from there we'll that's sort of like my stress test, right? If that happens, most likely like it's not going to break on your application, and then we'll go from there. So we'll see. I'm really excited about this project though, because I think this is something Ruby sorely needs, and it also feels like something that can be pulled off in 4 weeks of like real good heads down development
time. Sure. I think so. Or at least you can get a good prototype.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, like maybe a solid beta that's like, do not put this in your CI. Like, please try it out though. Right? Like,
yeah.
It's sort of the kind of thing where I'm like, I want to hit up the GitHubs, Shopify's, Procore's of the world and be like, do any of your tests start failing if you put your entire Rails app through this?
Right, because that's one of the interesting things about a Ruby formatting tool, right? Is that it's a lot easier to do something that seems like it should just be a stylistic change, but actually changes the semantics of the code. So it's a lot easier to accidentally do that in Ruby than in other languages.
Yeah, maybe.
Especially like semicolon delimited languages.
That's actually a fun one, is like, because also Ruby has semicolons, right?
Right.
But yeah, no, I'm.
I really hope that we don't have a formatting tool that starts inserting semicolons. That would be terrible.
I've decided that expressions need to end with semicolons, and you will. Like, how to get your auto formatter instantly ignored, make Ruby look like C code. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. But we'll see. Like, yeah, right now it's really at the stages of, can I preserve correct indentation as like we introduce blocks and that sort of thing? And also like, can I make it really, really fast? I'm actually using like streaming IO instead of assembling a massive string in memory. And that just turned out in my like stress tests to be a lot faster.
Sure.
Which is also really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you are buffering like some small amount instead of making a bazillion syscalls, but...
Yeah, I mean, well, as a first pass, I'm like letting the operating system deal with that, and then we'll see if like there needs to be some buffer IO in there, but like whatever.
Sure.
It turns out IO instead of assembling a massive string in memory is a good model for this.
Yes,
I guess the point I'm making. It's actually really interesting as well, because the entirety of my AST Walker state at the moment is how deeply am I indented and am I at the start of a line or not? Because it turns out in Ruby, everything is an expression. So many more things are an expression than you would expect. I guess for the folks at home, just quickly, in sort of like parser theory, there are two sort of very well-known top-level constructs. One is a statement and the other one is an expression. In a language like, say, C, a statement would be like defining a function in int main, open curly, close curly, right? In Ruby, that's a def something is an expression, and so is like a class statement and a constant path. And basically, in Ruby, everything is an expression. This is not absolutely true, but it's mostly true.
What is a statement in Ruby?
I don't think it actually has one, but like it has.
But you're saying, so it's not absolutely true that everything is an expression. What isn't an expression? I think I'm pretty sure it is absolutely true, like that everything in Ruby is an expression. Some things are expressions that return nil.
Oops. Oops.
Good job.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me quickly tab to my like Ruby formatter, and I can tell you the things that don't hang off the expression function.
Sam was so upset that I said that some things are expressions that return nil that he hung up on me.
I think a bare class declaration and a bare module declaration are not expressions.
I thought they both returned the class that you just defined.
Oh no!
Well,
oh, no,
no, it is
oh,
still
no.
an expression, but it returns nil.
Yeah. Oh no! You are quite right. Actually, literally all of these things, literally 100% of these things, yes, come back into format expression eventually. Yeah. So basically, I mean, I don't want to say that's absolutely true because I haven't implemented parsing 100% of Ruby yet, but like. Yeah, basically everything's an expression. And what that means, I guess, is that an expression is a thing that can be assigned to a value. So you can say local variable equals and then class and then a bunch of stuff. That's actually totally valid Ruby. And so you need to know whether or not you're at the start of a line or whether like something has come on the left-hand side of your expression in order to be able to like format it in a way that isn't totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sorry, just to put a bow on that, given that we got disconnected halfway through. So the entirety of my parser state is how deeply are we indented, and is the next thing that we're about to emit the start of the line or like not, right?
Right. I guess I'm not sure why you're tracking whether it's the start of the line. Is that just so you can emit indentation?
Yeah, it's also so that like you can correctly decide what to put, like where to put spaces and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to find something that conditionals on this as like a good example. Oh, it's basically like, do you emit new lines at the end of calls or like, do you keep going? Like, for example, if you have like X equals A of B plus B of C, you don't want new lines after your call. But if you just have like A of B on a line on its own, you want a new line, right? So like, it's that sort of thing.
Gotcha. New lines are interesting too, because they sort of affect other things.
Uh-huh.
So... for example, like this is less common in Ruby because it uses two-space indentation. But like if you're, let's say, really far indented and you're doing like long variable name equals long class name dot new.
Yeah.
Right. So that is now an expression that is too long to be on a single line. Right. And so you would do something like equals new line indent two spaces long class name dot new. But now because you've done that, you might have put the arguments each on their own line before.
Yeah.
But because this is now its own line, it now has enough room that it can actually just fit all on a single line.
Yeah, so I actually, like, I have a few takes on this. The way that they solve this in Go is they just encourage everyone to have single letter variable names basically everywhere. I'm kind of not joking. There's this naming principle where it's like, variable names in Go should be short rather than long. This is especially true for local variables with limited scope, basic rule. The further from its declaration a name is used, the more descriptive the name should be. But then, like, in practice, most variable names in Go are between one and three letters long, which is really funny. I'm going to do a bunch of work around where to put, like, line breaks and drop commas style and stuff. That's something I'm really intent on sweating. So, like, if you have an array literal, how big does it need to be before every item gets its own line, right? Like, right. And those sorts of things. And the same is true for args lists and args lists in function definitions versus args list in calls, like all of that stuff. Like, I've written enough Ruby now that I feel like I have good taste about where those should and should not go. So I'm going to work real hard to do that. My sort of, actually, this is a good point. We got so far into the weeds of talking about like how parsing works that I guess I didn't talk about my North Star at all. My North Star here is that it should produce like minimal git diffs for like the changes that you're trying to do, right? So like trailing commas will be absolutely 100% enforced on new line separated collections and you can't stop me.
Right.
And like that sort of thing, after reader or after accessor blocks, each one will get its own line so that like if you add a new one or remove one, like it churns a single line rather than like, you know, you having to work out what changed within a line, that sort of thing, right?
And then are you going to do a separate add or accessor call on each line?
Yeah. So sorry, what I mean is like if in your code you had add or accessor A, B, C, I would do add or accessor A, add or accessor B, add or accessor C for
you. Right, you could just put B and C on their own line if you wanted to, but then you have to add parentheses to be able to put the trailing comma on the last one, and it's funky.
And that looks like code that nobody writes in Ruby, right?
I know people who have written that code.
Okay.
And they shouldn't, but...
most people don't put parentheses on their add or accessors. So actually, this is one where, like, I'm going to deviate slightly from, like, complete purity. So, like, for example, the first skew of this formatter inserts parentheses on your require calls, because require calls are just calls, and it just wants parentheses on all of your calls. But, like, that obviously would like immediately make it something that nobody would want to use. Right. And so there will be a handful of like whitelisted function names that do not have to take parentheses, right?
Are you going to special case 2 in our spec?
Of course I am.
Okay.
Of course I am.
I do think it's funny, like the style guide for should you use parentheses is basically like, yes, except for keyword-ish things.
Right. It's like things that are maybe keywords, but are maybe not keywords, but maybe don't look too hard.
And then also two, which isn't at all like a keyword, but we just pretend it is.
Yeah, I like how literally the entire universe decided that's how it should look. Even though, like, there's no, I mean, that's how it's done in the RSpec documentation, but I don't know that there's, like, a strong historical reason for that.
I mean, it's too many parentheses otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
If your line ends with, like, three closing parentheses, that always feels awkward to me.
Fair enough. It's actually really funny. I was talking to Ryan Davis at RubyConf, and we, of course, Seattle style is no parentheses apart from where they're necessary. And I was like, I think parentheses are good, Ryan. And he's like, only when they're necessary. And I was like, okay, fair enough. That's your opinion. You're entitled to it. But yeah, so like require, obviously, like the P method on kernel probably puts. I think most people don't puts with parentheses. Like, that will be a whitelist.
Well, and P shouldn't be making it into production anyway. I don't know that needs to get whitelisted.
Yeah, but I don't, like, remember, if this happens every time you save, I don't want it to become annoying
while
you're doing debugging. Like, my true North Star is minimize git diff, and this should be so fast that you want to put it in your editor's save hook.
See, and that's another one where I think you might want to preserve user behavior, is did P have parentheses or not?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going
to... sometimes I will put them in there if it's... I want to actually just preserve the expression that was there before. And yep. P, especially if there's blocks involved, P can really... like, you end up accidentally passing the block to P.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Which then ends with the really fun P open parenthesis, some expression do a block end close parenthesis, which just looks...
yeah.
Horrendous, but, you know.
Totally. But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. I'm really excited to get a chance to build this and test it and write some docs and kick off a new little open source project.
Nice. Well, I'm excited to try it because Ruby is definitely sorely missing like a good automated formatting tool.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we wrap?
Sure. Show notes for this episode can be found at yakshave.fm/10.
As always, ratings and reviews on iTunes are appreciated.
If you have feedback on this episode or any of our other episodes, you can tweet us at @yakshave, email us at hosts@yakshave.fm, or leave a comment on the website.
Thanks for listening to The Yakshave, and we'll see you next time.